Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 49 of IGEL Weekly. I'm your host, Andy Whiteside. I'm work has no boundaries, working from a diner in Rock Hill, South Carolina, where I had a breakfast meeting. And so I'm going to go on mute when I'm not talking and kind of leave it to Patrick and Chris to do most of the talking and cover the topic. Patrick, how's it going? Patrick Toner.
Hey, Andy, how are you? Thanks for having me. Going good. Just personal side, coming down to the wire here, selling my house. I'm in the process of relocating down to Florida. So just been it's been an adventure. You know, everything that could have gone wrong in my house has gone wrong from, I won't get into the details, but
we're Patrick, getting it. So Patrick, you work for Zintegra, right?
That is true. I'm with Zintegra, joined back in November.
Do we have an office in Florida where you're moving to?
We do not. So the,
do we have an office where you currently live?
No, as you can see, if you're watching the video, you can see my attic office here. Yep. The weird ceilings. It's funny. We talk about, I think last time we were talking about, you know, the remote workforce, and all three of us, I mean, we're just used to that, right? That was our pre-COVID. That was normal, working from anywhere, home, on the road, wherever. But yeah, so the personal side doing well.
Right. Okay. You're living the post pandemic dream. Truth is, in our world, it was our dream. It was reality even before this thing happened.
Yeah, when they were saying new normal, I was just thinking this is just normal. I don't know. I don't understand what you're talking about. I'm traveling less. That was the only thing that was new. But,
Well, and I would say that as a company, right, we, maybe not me, but as a company, we were traveling less before the pandemic, too. I mean, it became the reality of T's and C's and time and materials, and people didn't need you to be in their office now. They don't even want you there now.
It's so true. Yeah, they really don't. They prefer you to just stay remote. Most of the time, they're remote. So it's anyway, so yeah, that's the only thing that's really changed. But working from anywhere with these different technologies we use, you know, status quo, right?
Yeah. Well, we're going to talk in a minute about how to upgrade to a work from anywhere technology that's not Windows. And we'll talk about that in our discussion in a minute. Chris Feeney, how's it going?
It's going well. So I echo many things there. I've been a remote employee since 2005. So there was nothing really new for me when people all got sent home. So I've just kind of known this life for a majority of my career. Lots happened. I was thinking about this when I first ventured into the world of being a remote employee working for a vendor. My son was going into kindergarten, and on Saturday he graduates from college, our oldest. And so we're gearing up for that big event. I will say this, I mean, just, it is definitely picked up, the place that I normally park, for example, at the airport 2 years ago, when my daughter was going to college for the first time, it was a ghost town, the pandemic middle. I mean, just, there was nobody there. And now, the parking lots are filled up. I mean, it's pretty amazing just to see, things are back. So I'm back to doing a lot of expense reports lately. So, but yeah, I'm excited about a lot of things that are happening. We're kicking off our Disrupt conferences this week. There's a lot to share about what's happening in the world that we live in with IGEL specifically. So.
Very cool. Very cool. So
our topic for this week, right, is the name of the blog, and I'll share it here on the screen in a second, is your next Windows update might just be an upgrade to IGEL OS. And I think what we're really going to cover here, first of all, we're going to cover, you know, why move away from Windows, Microsoft Windows. I love Microsoft Windows, don't get me wrong. But in a lot of use cases in the corporate world or in the business world, it just might create problems that you just don't need any longer. And Linux, and specifically in this case, a managed Linux from IGEL could be the answer. And then we're going to cover how to get it done. So guys, I'll kick us off and ask you guys, why is it important that we consider moving away from the beautiful mess that is Microsoft Windows for the endpoint?
I'd like to kick off that, if you don't mind, Patrick.
Sure, go for it.
It's a timely discussion. So on Friday, I was up in Boston, and we were in a meeting and just talking about ransomware attacks and devices that were not running IGEL, completely unusable and massively spreading. And so just the mitigation factor alone, the disaster recovery option, either reactively or potentially in a proactive manner, like we're about to go into here, with the backup measure being a DAS environment that is ready to go. You can fire it up in a moment's notice, or it's already configured. You just turn it on, whatever it might be. But the mitigation of being able to get back up and running and productive, from a security perspective alone. So that it's a timely topic. It happens a lot more often than we probably would like to admit, but, that trying to upgrade Windows on the endpoint and all the security tools or whatever that go with it, and be a whole lot easier just to either pop in a pocket or just flash it with a lighter weight operating system that can get you to a Windows desktop anyway. So I'll just open it up with that. I'm sticking to that story.
Cool.
So Chris, to put a bow on that, that was security, right? There was security reason to move away from very capable, maybe too capable, Microsoft Windows on the endpoint.
Yeah, and very prone to attack. You know, whether you have the tools on there or not. I was talking to a friend of mine who's a security guru, and a lot of these tools have the anti mitigation, like they can immediately respond. But in industries, they're afraid to turn it on because it might affect the work that the users need to do, because they're dealing with or trying to, you know, the unknown factor of letting it just take, you know, basically fight back. But what does that actually do for the user experience? So I'm not an expert in terms of all those tools and what they can do, but that's one of those things that I think they're struggling with.
Well, the other part of that is, why respond when you could have prevented almost all of it to begin with and not have to respond?
Exactly. And so there's certainly a compelling argument, and it's not a matter of where do I get one of these virtual desktops, for example. They're Microsoft sells them in the cloud.
Yeah. So, hey, Patrick, can I get an amen on the security angle Chris is talking about?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, absolutely. I love the, you know, it's the idea of being proactive, right, versus reactive, just putting that, hardening that operating system ahead of time, not waiting for something to happen and then remediating it, you know. And
so Patrick, I think we got the security one. Other than security, what are other reasons why we want to move away from Microsoft Windows on the endpoint if it's not required?
Yeah, well, you know, there's a few of them, but probably the top one outside of security that I talk to customers about the most and have for years is just manageability, right? You know, if you're going to be connecting to Citrix, VMware, a VDI session, or desktop as a service, whether it's Amazon Workspaces or, you know, Azure Virtual Desktop, there's no reason to have a Windows endpoint that you have to patch, that you have to potentially put an antivirus on, and you know, monitor with security tools we were just talking about, all these different things, when you could just put let me take one step further, you know, have a larger, bulkier operating system on a device that's going to make it slower and it's going to be a worse end user experience because you're using an older device. The minimum requirements for Windows continually will go up and your device will be obsolete, versus, you know, use something like iGel operating system. And it has a, you know, very light and, you know, low minimum requirements for, you know, for installing the operating system on hardware. It just needs an x86 processor, 2 gigs of RAM, 2 gigs of hard drive space. And the beauty of it is, from a manageability perspective, it's very simple to manage and you don't have to patch it the way you patch Windows. So you can push updates out on a quarterly basis. You know, I've dealt with customers, I don't recommend this, but they haven't updated their firmware in years because it just worked and it, you know, it was just locked down. That's obviously not something we would suggest you do, but customers do it. So it's very much, when it comes to, you know, when it comes to managing the endpoint, you're definitely going to move in a positive direction with iGel and breathe new life into old hardware.
I think I want to key in on what you just said there. That is one of the beauties of Linux that we've seen. We've had customers where they literally, because they had it on their endpoints, it just was so reliable. It didn't necessarily force them to, you know, update or upgrade. They continued on. Obviously, as technology, you know, expands and grows and changes and things, there's a need for that. But having a machine that is running an operating system that was less vulnerable to just, you know, wear and tear and all these other things that that you might have an impacting in a Windows environment, allowed them to just remain on it for a long time. And they'll continue to have that when they upgrade, of course. But that's less headache at the end of the day.
So let me ask you guys both a quick question. When was the first time that you put Linux on a endpoint computer and tried to leverage it to do your job? When, just give me a year, like roughly when did you do it for the first time?
To do my job or just to play around with it?
No, to try to do your job. You took a PC and you repurposed it and ran a Linux operating system on it and attempted to do your job using that solution.
You know, I was actually working for an industrial contractor. I want to say it was about, 10 years ago, maybe. And we tried to put Ubuntu on devices to connect to VMware. And it was before I knew iGel existed. And it worked fine. The only problem was we couldn't find a good way to manage it. And so it was about 10 years ago for me. How about you, Chris?
But Patrick, that wasn't you trying to do your job. That was you trying to create a system for other people to do their job, correct?
Correct. Yeah.
As a true knowledge worker, maybe a power user, when's the first time you tried to use Linux as your endpoint? Or did you ever? And it's fine to say I never did because I just knew it wouldn't work.
Yeah. You know, I've always tinkered with Linux. When I joined iGel, so it was about back in 2018, I guess, there was, you know, basically they said, look, we're a Linux company. You need to work Linux full time. So my laptop was Linux for 4 years. That was probably the first time I really relied on Linux day to day. And ironically enough, I was doing something a few weeks ago and I just was having a hard time, you know, doing it from Windows. And I took one of my older laptops here and repurposed it with Ubuntu just so I have a Linux workstation. So it's funny how you get hooked on it, right? You realize the power in it, doing simple things like SSHing into a server. Just you get used to that Linux terminal. So I would say really when I started iGel, it was probably the first time I really all day long worked on Linux. That's the first time I can remember. I probably tried it before that. That was the first time I really just went all in with it.
Chris, how long ago was it when you tried to use Linux as your operating system, if ever?
So, truth be told, it wasn't until iGel. I dabbled with it before just to get familiar with it. But Patrick and I literally started the same week 4 years ago. And so I think he had actually got his laptop before I did. I waited almost a month before I got one. I was using a UD Pocket and accessing iGel's stuff, like, you know, just office.com. But by the time my laptop showed up, I ended up just going with what I knew, and that was Windows. But all along, I was like, I need to make the switch. So fast forward about a year and almost a half ago, one of our partners was like, I'm going to run it every day. I get to a Citrix desktop, and I'm like, all right, if he's going to do it, then I'm going to commit to it. And so for me, it was basically like late December 2020, I guess, January 2021, I committed to using an iGel device at home, connecting in to the things I need to use, or remoting into my laptop, running Windows. And when I'm on the road, using a UD Pocket more or less with my LG Grim.
Yeah. Well, so for me, it was 2003. I installed Red Hat on an old PC that I had. And other than doing things like Patrick talked about, you know, PuTTY and SSH and other things, basic admin things, I couldn't get much done because the world of SaaS didn't exist really. Right. And so my next install was use RPM to install the remote desktop client for Linux, just so I could remote back into a Windows machine. And that was the moment I realized, hey, I can get away with this barely, but I can't expect end users to do it. And then fast forward to like 2015, 2014 timeframe, and I could take the power of a Citrix or a VMware or a browser and combine that with a truly manageable, configurable by the systems admin world of iGel. And then all of a sudden, Linux finally plus the fact that the Horizon client, the Citrus client, finally got feature parity enough, almost 100%, where it became a real player. And that's how we got to where we are today, where we can talk about you truly can use Linux on the endpoint, maybe with the help of some middleware, probably with the help of some middleware, like a Citrix, like a VMware, like a Microsoft, and get your job done and create this manageable, secure environment all at the same time. Would you guys agree that that's what happened and how we got to the point where we can have this conversation?
Yeah, absolutely. I would. I mean, I, in fact, last week with our CTO, I was like, can I get a Windows virtual desktop full time? And he's like, yeah, we can arrange for that. And I'm like, all right, I'm down. But we also, I mean, just the other thing too, with the advent of SaaS, I mean, the products that we use regularly in our case are all office.com Microsoft based, or yeah. I mean, you guys use Salesforce. You just need a functional browser and you can get a lot done just using a browser.
Yeah.
Well,
look, we've covered a lot here on why to move this. We only really covered two things. There's probably 20 more. Security and manageability are the two we really covered. But the point of this blog that we're reviewing is how you take and make that step into the iGEL OS. Mm-hmm. And we really want to cover, you know, what's covered here, which is how we get people to there. And this has come up on several customer calls. So I thought this was super timely. Chris, let's go with you first. System Center Configuration Manager, the section here about how do we use SCCM to take Windows managed by SCCM and convert it into an iGEL unit managed more than likely by UMS.
Yeah, so it's a great feature that was added in a couple years ago. So obviously SCCM is pretty widely used to manage Windows endpoints. Naturally speaking, you convince a customer, okay, we definitely want to convert. How can I do this without touching physically these machines? And then, of course, enter a scenario where you can't be in the building, but you can use a tool like SCCM. And so we built an agent, essentially, that you can deploy down to your Windows machine. And once it's installed, it will then go through and be in a position where you can then push down the operating system components to do the in-place upgrade, essentially. That's probably not the best word, it's even though it's in there, but you literally are converting the device without touching it. It'll reboot, install, and then when it comes back up, it's got iGEL on it instead of Windows. And you use the same tool that you use to manage Windows. And so that was a feature that we've added in and still have today. And I don't know how widely used it is. I know it comes up quite often when asking how can we get it out there. So if you're using SCCM, we have a tool for that. And there's instructions here and then certainly a video on kind of how it all comes together.
Patrick, do you have any firsthand experience of using this method to do large conversions or conversions?
I do. Yeah. So before I started iGEL, I managed SCCM for a large healthcare organization. So this was a lot of times, and you know, you see it in different verticals, not just healthcare. Obviously, SCCM is a huge enterprise tool out there. Chris and I first started iGEL, this didn't exist, right? This was not, there was a way to do it. You could create an image with iGEL and push it out with SCCM. But it was very, it was manual, it was complicated. I think Douglas DeCamp was the one who showed me how to do it first. Shout out to Douglas. And, to have a built-in tool now that you just install into SCCM, and then you can pick your iGEL image and push it out. I mean, this is huge. If you have, if you're an organization that uses SCCM to manage Windows devices, this is the easiest way to go. You already have all of those devices under management. You can pick and choose which devices you're going to push iGEL to. This is a really great tool for companies that are using SCCM. I think they've rebranded it to something else now, but whatever SCCM is now, I should probably look that up.
Intune, Endpoint Manager. Yeah, just chasing the branding.
Right.
Okay. Let's move on to the next. Well, before I do that, anything additional, Chris, you'd want to say about the ability to push out the installer through SCCM?
No, I think that, I mean, there's obviously more detailed instructions on our knowledge base on this. And like I said, engineering, like I said, they, you know, in my 4 years, again, as Patrick said, it didn't exist. Now we have these various tools. no real blockers as far as getting the operating system out to systems to be converted and deployed. And so the next one we're about to touch on has been around for a while.
Chris, I want to comment on the SCCM one real quick. I want people listening to know you're not done with SCCM at that point. You're just done using it to manage those local and remote endpoints. Now you can move on to using SCCM to manage that that middleware and the infrastructure pieces. It's still very relevant because even though we're talking about removing Windows from the equation here, you're still going to more than likely connect to Windows to get the job done. You're just going to secure and make the endpoint more manageable. So SCCM is still a big part of an IGEL world. It's just not how you manage those endpoints any longer, the actual physical endpoints.
Correct.
All right. Yeah. Let's talk about the next one, which is quite commonly used, has been for years. We've got several large rollouts of this, and that's where we use a Pixie scenario to boot to an imaging server and get the IGEL image pushed out. Patrick, you want to jump out? Chris, you were going to go first. So go ahead and cover the Pixie cert scenario.
Pixie, if you're not familiar with it, it's basically network booting, and then it reaches out and there's a Pixie server that you can have it contact with networking, and then it will respond. And in our case, we have a deployment appliance that could be used to push down the image, the ISO file, essentially, and then begin converting the device automatically, or you can have it sitting there waiting for somebody to hit the okay, go ahead and do it. Most likely, you're going to do that with an automated piece. And a lot of thin clients that are running maybe Windows embedded or something else might be using Pixie. And so it would just be a matter of, when you look at your network boot order, when the device comes up, making sure Pixie is at the top before it gets to the local hard drive. But it's fairly straightforward. And I can see on the video there as well, there's a screenshot of our deployment appliance, which we offer up. I think it's a great tool. If your imaging device is in mass before you push them out to the floor, you could do it in like a lab very easily. If they're already in production, you just have to make sure that you're pointing these devices to a deployment appliance, and you'd have to work with your DHCP server to arrange for that. Patrick, I don't know if you have any other comments on that.
Yeah, I was just going to say, it's funny to me, we're still talking about Pixie booting, you know, in the year 2022. You know, I'm thinking back in the day using Norton Ghost, and there was a great open source one called Fog, you know, and do like Windows deployments and you know, on customer sites. But yeah, I agree with you, Chris. I think this is when this was the only option, was this for the USB stick. You had to get a little creative with the Pixie boot appliance if you wanted to do it out in, you know, in a production environment. Now, I think this is a great use case for, you know, just a walled off, you know, lab room where you could just plug devices into switches and they automatically boot. You know, it's really a great place. It's a really great solution for that. You know, it's kind of, hey, a staged environment to stage a bunch of devices and then walk them out to the floor. You know, and it also includes, you can make it a DHCP server as well, which is kind of nice, that this appliance. So it's kind of an all-in-one solution. You just plug it into a switch and it's good to go.
So Patrick, I drove an hour to meet somebody for breakfast this morning in a 2003 car. It's 2022 now. The difference between this car I'm in and a modern day car, as long as it's not a Tesla or some type of electric car, is not really that different. Tell me the difference between a PC today and one from 20 years ago when I did my Red Hat install. How different are they really?
Yeah, I mean, probably just processor speed, hyper-threading on the processor. But I guess to your point, if you think about before 2003, everything was like doubling in speed before that. You think about, you know, and then it kind of did table off a bit. So it's, I guess it's not that much. It's definitely faster hardware, but we're still using a lot of the same things, to your point.
But the components are the same. They're built the same, as Michael Dell building in his garage in 1990-something or even earlier. My point in bringing that up is Pixie is still probably the best way to do it if you and your network team and they're on the LAN are all on the same page. Man, it's just tried and true. You know, it is extremely the right way to do it if you have the right pieces in the right places and it lines up well for Pixie.
Yeah, it's probably worth mentioning too, to your point, Andy, the SCCM tool can obviously leverage Pixie as well. So, you know, the protocol is still used very widely.
Yeah. And here's another way to make that point. That's how the computer manufacturers, at least I think, still get the images on the devices when they build them, right? They still some type of Pixie boot, or I guess, unless you guys know some other way they're doing it these days, but historically, that's how they got them imaged to begin with, is through some type of Pixie motion.
Yeah, that's. I had a couple of scenarios with before I was in the channel role, working with some manufacturers that are now in iGel ready. But in the factory, they were shipping devices already preloaded, and so we just got them set up with our Pixie Boot appliance, and they ran through and, you know, would image, I don't know, 10 or so at a time, whatever it was, and box them up, ship them out. Customer fires it up, they get connected, get licensed and configured, and they're ready to go.
All right, let's cover the next one. I mean, we beat the Pixie one to death, and to be honest, it can take it. It's durable, reliable, awesome. The last one, and I don't know much about this one, I don't think. Maybe as we get into it, it'll all come back to me, but electronic software distribution. As I'm reading it, I'm starting to realize exactly what we're talking about here. But Patrick, you want to take this one first?
Sure. Yeah. You know, I was confused myself at first because the naming, but what he's really talking about here is the OSC for Windows, right? And this is a great utility. My understanding is they kind of, you know, back in the day, iGel used to manage Windows devices. So there was already a Windows agent that exists. So I think they kind of repurposed some of that tool. And what they did was, you can either create an MSI or an exe file and push it down to your Windows devices. It runs, and then what it does is it brings it under management, or it makes it visible in the UMS console. And then from there, you can actually choose when you want to re-image the device. And this is really great if you're, let's say you're an organization where you don't use something like SCCM. You're using some third-party tool. He mentions a few of them here, you know, Avanti, Workspace ONE. You know, if you're using something else to manage your devices, this is a great way, you know, if you're already managing those devices, push this MSI or EXE file down to the devices, have it, you know, have a script to run it, and it just automates that process to convert it to iGel. So this is a really cool tool. It's been out for, I think, about maybe 2 years or so. And it's gotten a lot better from the first iteration, you know, my experience. It just works really well. So yeah, that's essentially where this would be a fit.
Yeah, no, I think this plus the SCCM agent, you know, kind of covers a lot of bases in terms of the tools being used today to manage Windows endpoints. It is a great tool. It was, as you mentioned earlier, that we did have a Windows agent when iGel sold not just Linux, but a Windows IoT kind of OS as well. And or just a general agent that you could used to do some basic functionality, nothing really big, but we basically repurposed that for the sole purpose of being able to deploy it. It's the mechanism that will then take the ISO and reboot that machine and begin converting it all without having to touch the machine at all. So the device, once it has the agent installed, it'll actually show up in UMS. That's one of the differences, I think, between the SCCM agent, but it'll actually show up in UMS. And then from UMS, you can say, all right, now schedule this conversion to take place or whatever. So the slight differences there between the two.
Let's cover these real quick, because now that we've gone through them, we need to kind of clarify. So the first one was the SCCM agent using the agent from System Center Configuration Manager from Microsoft. Number two was the legacy but beautiful way of using a pre-execution environment boot, Pixie, which is, you know, for us, for many of us that worked in endpoints forever, that's how we've done it. And then now we've got an agent from iGel that once you can get it on the machine, probably through SCCM and that SCCM agent, then it then phones home to the UMS and gets the image deployed that way. Right, guys? Those are the three things we've covered so far?
Yeah. Right.
Okay. And then finally, the last one is the iGel appliance. So let me go back up to the Pixie one. It's almost like this thing's written, like they separated these the way they have on purpose. The Pixie Boot that we were talking about a while ago is using your network Pixie Boot traditional way of doing it, using whatever your pre-execution imaging server was. What we're calling out in the fourth option here is also Pixie, but it's using what I believe Patrick was alluding to multiple times, and that is the appliance from iGel to be that imaging server for deploying iGel through a Pixie-initiated method, right, Patrick?
Yeah, and if I'm reading this right, it looks like the way it's written, you know, the difference here is they're both using the appliance, but this one is enabling the DHCP option, right? So, you know, the iGel appliance here, you know, you can flip DHCP on, you know, and basically it's an all-in-one device. It's your router. It's going to dish out your IP addresses. So if you're plugging devices into, let's say you have a, you know, an iGel appliance running a VM and that's plugged in, you know, routed in through a switch, as you're plugging devices into that, this is a 24 port switch. They're pulling their IP address from the Pixie iGel appliance. And then the iGel appliance is also pushing the images out automatically. So I think this is like kind of what Chris and I were talking about. This is really great for a stage environment. You know, you set this up in a lab, it's a segregated network. You can't really touch anything else. You don't have to worry about the DHCP server component of it messing up your network. It's great in that use case. And it really does, it makes it easy to just mass install devices if you're holding them in your hands physically.
Yeah, I think what this is getting at is if you have a legacy imaging server, you can use Pixie, get your iGel image on that, let it happen. If you don't have one, or your department's not responsible for that, or the other players in your organization won't play along with you doing this, then you can have the iGel appliance, which essentially gives you one that you could control in your lab environment, like Patrick was talking about, or in production. At that point, you just got to get on the same page with your networking team around the you know, the DHCP helper options and who owns what. Chris, right? Or different?
Yeah, no, I was just thinking, scrolling through this, there's even a few more things that are not in this article that have, I think, come about since. And a lot of this is attributable to our iGel Ready program, where the OSC tool, if you're booting it up like on a USB stick, for example, or you're using it to image a device, you can actually create like a master image with that. There's a couple other options. We don't have it in this article, but there are some additional functionality there where then you can say, all right, that's going to be my master image that I then I roll that out. We could probably I'll see if there's a blog already out there, but if not, we'll get it written up and then we'll talk through it on another podcast in a future episode.
Well, Chris, as you say that, there's really three, right? There's the OS converter, which is a USB stick that allows you to pop it in and convert the operating system. Old school, we would have done that through CD-ROMs, right? Or DVDs. There's the ability to use a UD Pocket, where you actually boot from the UD Pocket itself, which is becomes the hard drive. And then there's finally you buy your hardware from a company that sends it out, whether it's from iGel or LG or Lenovo and others, where it just comes with it preloaded, and it's just a matter of pointing it to the UMS and updating and managing it from there. Right? There's three more ways, really, but they're not covered here. This is really about how to convert something, getting it out of Windows world into the world of iGel Linux.
That's right. Yeah. And I think what we're starting to see is, obviously, as the world's gotten, well, to our security topic before, there's many market factors happening, and iGel's in a really good position to, you know, take devices, whether they're brand new from a vendor or existing ones running Windows, and have multiple ways to get the operating system deployed and easily configured so that user productivity, at the end of the day, user experience is key. All the other stuff we talked about, manageability, security, is certainly important, but the user experience has to be acceptable, more than that, actually. And that's really, those are three key things, right? Is much more secure, a much more easily managed operating system and tools for that. And then at the end of the day, user experience that allows you to do things like this, like we're doing now, whatever, without realizing that it's actually coming from a virtual digital workspace. So
Yeah. I mean, I think the summary here is we are now at a point that if you're SaaS based only, you could use a Linux operating system that has the power of deployment management, aka IGEL. Or if you need Windows still in the mix, you can use middleware like Citrix, VMware, Microsoft, others that can provide that middleware layer that gets you back to x86 worlds, whether it's a desktop or applications. And we're finally to a point where Linux is, in those scenarios, a truly usable operating system. And many organizations are moving in those scenarios anyway. So now's the time to consider getting Windows off the endpoint. And we know it's a large percentage of people that still use Windows to get the Windows, which if you think about it, it's kind of like looking yourself in a mirror and just watching it just keep going forever.
That's a good analogy.
Patrick, any additional comments on the topic here in general, moving away from Windows and how to get there with IGEL?
No, I think, you know, anyone listening to this, you know, you should really, I mean, I think it's a change of mindset a lot of times, right? I mean, doing this from if you're already connected to Citrix, it's a no brainer. But if you're, you know, I think the one thing that's sticking out in my mind as we've had this conversation is SaaS has changed a lot. Office 365 running in a browser, one example of it. It's really good. Once you start getting used to it, I think Andy, you and I talked about this. It's hard to go back. I don't even use the local apps anymore. I do it 100% through the browser. The way we're working is changing. And I think it's a better time than ever to try this out in your organization. You know, see if this is a fit for you. If you're doing VDI, it's definitely a fit. And, you know, maybe some of your users can get by just using a browser to connect to their Office apps and using something like Zoom or Teams locally to do video conferencing. You can do all that with a Linux OS like IGEL.
And a good way to say that browser term, you're absolutely right. It is a browser, a web browser, but specifically Chrome, right? You guys, IGEL, not you guys, you're part of Zintegra now, but yeah. IGEL bring in Chrome browser or Chromium into the operating system natively and managed. Man, that was a huge step in the direction of not even needing middleware anymore for a lot of people to be able to be successful.
Yeah, it's huge. You know, you have Chromium built in, you still have the Firefox browser, and then you have the custom partition if you want to use Chrome or, you know, actually Microsoft now has Edge for Linux, which is crazy. You can give them a shot too. They're both obviously Chromium based. Yeah, just so many good options there.
Hey, we should probably give, what is it, Craig Hinchliff? Is that how you pronounce his name? We probably give him credit for the blog that we're reviewing here. It's an awesome write-up by Craig.
Thank you, Chris.
Yeah, he definitely, I think he last year he moved to Okta.
Yep.
So he's in the world of SaaS and security, but he was a Citrite for many years, from my general understanding. So, okay. But would love to, I'll reach out to him, see what he's up to these days.
Yeah. So at the minimum, he's a digital workspace. Work has no boundaries. He's one of us.
Absolutely. Correct.
Yeah.
All right. Hey, Chris, anything else before we kind of wrap this one up?
No, just a PSA that, if you haven't signed up for one of the IGEL Disrupt conferences, we're kicking things off this week in Boston. We've got multiple cities around the country. We've got basically a spring and a fall series. So the spring series is going to take us into June, early July, and then we'll take a break and then resume in, September again. So but we've got cities like Nashville, Minneapolis, Washington, D.C., Tampa, Pittsburgh, Newport Beach, California. Those are all that I'm aware of in the spring series, and then a few others in the fall. So hopefully one of those that's listening, you can sign up. Just look it up for IGEL Disrupt, and you'll see a registration there, and we'd love to see you there.
Yeah, my only complaint about the whole thing is you guys timed a bunch of them right when I'm on PTO with my family and I can't make them. I was hoping to make a bunch of them, but I'll make some of the ones in the fall. And looking forward to seeing, you know, the community again.
Yeah, I think definitely face-to-face activities are very much resuming. And so that's great to see.
Hey guys, we'll wrap this one up. As you see, I've moved from the diner waiting room into the parking lot in my car, slightly quieter. Hopefully it wasn't as bad as it started off. But guys, I appreciate you joining and covering this topic, and we'll do it again next week.
Sounds good.
That was great. Thanks.
Take care, guys.